1. Second verse, same as the first.
That's pretty good. You timed that properly.
Yeah, I'm good. See, I got the little timer going on over here.
I guess that's me starting us today.
It's you. It's 85, man. It's all you.
Well, I figured because I did it last week.
And a week before.
Well, that's all right.
And a week before.
I don't like break tradition or nothing.
And I should have stopped the music, but that's not going to matter.
I would do the intro.
That's not going to matter.
No, I gave up trying to do the
intro.
I think I did it once and it didn't work.
Sticking around with El Photo. Anyway, Linux Link Tech Show.
We're all here tonight.
Episode 85.
Yeah.
Full house. Little Link is here.
Little Link. I like it when they call me Little.
Little Link. Tidy Link. And we are at the monumental 85th episode. We are only 15
away from 100.
17 away from 100 and... No, 19 away from 104, which would be 2 years worth of episodes. 52
Except
weeks?
Not really, because we take generally two-week hiatus.
Yeah, we didn't take a two-week hiatus this year.
We took
did
one
we?
Week, right?
And we might have to take another week coming up soon.
Vacation week in the works.
You can always do a special episode from the Panera down the road. We can all meet over at Alan's house.
Yeah.
We do the
remember that success we had
Eastern
before
brand.
We do that.
Yes, but he's got much better bandwidth now, and so do I, as a matter of fact.
Still. Oh, yeah.
We could do it. Just
big fat audio stream coming in, nothing going out.
Yeah, but it's a thought that counts, though.
It is. It
usually.
Is. Tonight. Who's on the show tonight, Pat?
Kevin Carmody, CEO and president of Linspire. Yes, he was on Lug Radio a couple weeks ago, but we don't care. And we'll ask different questions.
Sure. You'll ask different questions.
Do you remember what questions they asked him on Lug Radio?
Yeah.
He copied them all down so we can ask again.
Good.
Sounds like a plan.
Why don't we just play the Lug Radio interview with him?
We could do that.
Done with it.
Come on, let me get out of here.
Right.
That's the way it is.
That's the way,
Dan's dog is about to hump Link's leg.
I don't think so.
Everybody does.
My legs are under the chair, man. That's got to be, you know, dog is like some kind of, well, it is Dan's dog, so.
Hey, was that a Windows thing?
No, that was an X11 VNC session ding.
Ding, 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 ding.
That was, I don't like what you're trying to do, tabbing too many times, ding.
Aha, the same I don't like what you're trying to do tabbing too many times ding that happens to me with my email.
That's right.
Ding.
I know how it goes. That's the way it is.
Do we want to, and you know, we got some email this week. Do we
email?
Address some of our...
Our hate mail.
Email? Our hate mail we got like last week. Some guy bantering on about how bad our last episode was. But no, it was two episodes ago, right? How bad that interview was, and the sound quality really sucked, and stuff like that. Hey,
well, I think we got much better last
sucks
week.
Sucks to be you. Listen to somebody else. I don't know. I think the sound quality is pretty. Well, it's what you guys have to remember, and we have had a couple of people commented about the quality of our sound on this show. But what you have to remember is, number one, we have no money. Number two, we don't have a soundboard guy. Number three, Number three, our show is live. Live. We don't like all the other guys you listen to, all of them. They all pre-record their shit, and they get to fiddle around with the sound a little bit, and they get to edit out the burps and farts and coughs and stuff like that. We don't have that luxury. So what you get here is pure, unadulterated
Burt's and Farbs.
Exactly, Burt's and Farbs. And
although I am listening to the output line nowadays, so I can sort of hear whether or not we're really screwing it up.
Yeah.
Well, they had that one thing when Link was at work and he was listening when you were at home.
Yes.
And it was and the stream was dying on you, right?
It was. Yeah, it died on me a couple times.
So Link is like posting on the chat, "What the heck's going on, guys? There's no stream." And everyone's like, "Okay, Link."
But there wasn't for me. Anyway, Mike from Kenya writes us.
First email from Africa.
I believe so, yeah.
World domination is underway.
That's right. We have world domination. We have hit every major country, even America. Mike from Kenya writes us and comments on Ian Murdoch's show and then says, all the same, I love your show. Keep up the good work. And Dan, stop farting. So we will take that under advisement. And we have verily, I say to you, we have corked off Dan's behind.
Without another thing on sound, though, we may be getting a compression unit next month. So.
Ooh.
We'll see how that works.
That will be sweet.
Okay, we also got email from John Mills. Wanted to drop us an email. Say how much he enjoys the show. Thanks, John. We appreciate that. By the way, we haven't gotten any. Have we gotten any like promos, IDs from anybody in a while?
Not really.
We seem to be in a predicament with that, you know, because we really enjoy having those IDs from you guys. Please, by all means.
Plus, it saves us from having to make them up too.
Yeah, right. We don't have to make them up. We'll just play your stuff. please send them right in. It's pretty cool. Anyway, did I miss anybody?
Yeah.
Who did I miss?
You missed
David Cole, right?
Let me go down. David Anderson.
Mr. Anderson.
Well, we got David Cole, too. From Toronto.
Mr. Anderson.
Go ahead.
Said it. We're the stuff. Who's David? Well, what's the David Anderson one?
David Anderson.
I don't see it.
First. Idle Banter.
Oh, you're reading from the forums.
No, I'm reading from the email. Came in today. So a few shows ago, someone wrote in complaining that not enough time was spent talking about Linux. Too much time was spent on personal lives. He weighs in favor of idle banter at the beginning of the show. What happened in the past week? Star Wars, your reaction? Dan asks. Elfin lied. What's up with that? It's all good.
What the hell's that?
Yeah, that's what I said.
What is he talking about?
I did? I don't remember asking that. But he said this is... This is his response. No, you didn't talk about Elfin lied yet, but you could. Okay. He said he watched the first volume this past weekend. And this is... I'm a little confused on this. I was going to write back, but then I ran out of time. This is what else said. Elfin lied was mentioned a couple times by the JN podcast cast. Did you ever listen to JN?
Never.
Okay, neither have I. Kennedy was aghast, so I put it in a reserve. J-Ant described Elfin Lied as both a romantic comedy and a bloody action series. Now, this is anime, obviously.
Okay.
I would be interested.
I was starting to feel sort of bad because I had no clue what the hell
he was talking about.
Now that I know what he's talking about, I don't feel bad.
Okay. The first thing I noticed when I picked up the box was the prolonged nudity warning. I have never seen such a warning before.
Nudity.
What do they mean by that? I don't know. I haven't seen it. I hope he'll let us know in the future. Disappointed with episode 3? You saw Darth Vader break loose from the table and crush the room around him and were not moved? No, not really. I was moved to leave a few minutes later. Anyway.
It was over anyway.
Lucy's break from her medical table leaves and going after Tracheus leaves Darth in the dust. I guess that's a reference to Elfin Lied because I think that's one of the characters' names. Elfin Lied plays with some conventions. There's a woman, Kisaragi, who keeps getting it wrong. Today I'm going to get it right. In a series such as Angelic Lair, she would be the main character. In Elfin Lied, she is not. Remember Rey from Evangelion? They play with that as well. Some shots, they seem to be going after the ring, but Helsing comes to mind instead, David. Okay, I guess I have to see Elfin Lied before I can understand some of that there. But we could always talk about episode 3. Alan, take it away, big boy. Because you obviously have been excited to talk about this. You and Pat.
Not as much as you, but I did finally
go
see it today.
I don't have any desire to really talk about it, but go ahead.
You're spent from your blog.
Well, I liked it myself, but then I liked the other ones too, and I just try not to compare them to, I don't know, to the originals, I guess, because then they fall down.
I was bummed out because Jar Jar didn't die.
Well, yeah, that was a character that just did not need to even be there, even just to walk. Thank God he didn't talk. But
well, you didn't see it yet, though.
No, I haven't seen it yet.
Dude, Darth Vader. Anakin Skywalker becomes Darth Vader.
No.
Spoiler alert.
Just say it isn't so.
No, I don't know. Out of the other two guys, you saw it, right, Pat?
I saw it, yeah.
I don't remember him coming off the medical table screaming no, and the room around him being crushed.
No, he crushes some robots, some medical droids around them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. I thought he just crushed his fist and yelled, Khan!
That would actually work too, yeah.
Khan!
Yeah, the Vader that I can remember from my childhood, I don't think would have screamed no like that.
I don't know. No! Dude, I'll tell you, the moment they flew the front half of the ship down onto the planet
and
the landing strip. That was my Batman and Robin moment
the
right there.
Ships that
I knew it was
going to
be a stinker. What?
Fire ships.
Yeah, what was the point?
Yeah, but you know, again, you have to expect that, though, because you know, all of the Star Wars movies have been slightly over the top and unbelievable.
I don't mind a little over the top, but that was just like flat in your face for days. How could he fly a ship with no propulsion, no means of steering, nothing?
There was a couple of little fins hanging off the back.
Dan, a 747
Dan,
would drop
is,
like a rock.
This is a movie series that has a main character that's half robot that walks around using his psychic powers to crush people.
Crush, crush, crush.
He's a cyborg.
I'm crushing your skull.
Now, if you contrast that to the unbelievability of flying a spaceship without propulsion or steering,
it sort of works.
It kind of works, yeah, exactly.
But I don't. I think.
How do you know he wasn't like using the Force or some shit?
He's that
don't know
powerful
that,
to use the Force, he can't detect the Emperor in the next room. The main bad
that's
guy.
That's a great point.
Maybe the Emperor.
Years.
That's in the next room, and they never figure
maybe
it out.
Maybe the Emperor in the next room is even, you know, more of a badass than that. I don't know. Maybe the Emperor was flying a damn ship. How do I know?
15 years.
It could happen, right?
Yeah, never. And when did General Grievous get a wheeze? He didn't have it in the Clone Wars saga.
He doesn't have lungs.
And
the hilarious part is once he starts the fighting, the wheeze goes away. It's only when he's walking around that you get that. And then all of a sudden he goes into this like huge fighting mode.
It must be psychological.
It's not there anymore.
What I didn't get was in Clone Wars saga, he was kicking ass. I mean, he was wiping Jedi
out.
Yeah,
he killed
right
like 30
left.
Jedi.
He's like,
right?
And then here comes Obi-Wan Kenobi with one lightsaber, cuts off two of his hands, and has him on the run in 30 seconds.
Yeah, it was too easy.
I don't know. What happened? I don't know.
Well, George Lucas says he's going to make, you know, experimental movies now. Now we're really going to see, without all the special effects, how much it really sucks.
Experimental movies? I thought that would just be special effects for him.
Well, no more special effects, so now you're going to have shitty dialogue with no special effects.
Oh, okay. Well, you know what?
Sounds like Lifetime for women.
You know what? I really like the
digital
first
cable.
Three.
There's like five of those channels
I'll
on.
I'll say it isn't so.
I really enjoyed the first trilogy. I watched Return of the Jedi the other day again. And towards the end, when he pulls off the Vader's helmet and he sees his father's eyes, there, Anakin's eyes, I said to my wife, you know, how soon until George Lucas comes out with a modified version of that where he superimposes Anakin's face in there instead of the original actor.
Unless you get like unless you still have like the video cassettes of those, you don't
never
have the original
see it again,
right.
And then at the very end, when the apparitions of Yoda and Obi-Wan are there,
you see young Anakin.
You see young Anakin there now
that
instead
sucks.
Of the original guy. I'm like, oh man, they did do it. Right before that happened, my wife said, how soon until you superimpose Anakin in there? And there he was.
Yeah.
Like, too late. Goodbye.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
Ron? I don't know. Oh, well.
I'm the same person who took the guns out of E.T., so.
Yeah, what the hell was
that? That's lame, man.
That was Spielberg.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
Spielberg.
Yeah. But still, same shit. You changed the original movie. Yeah, I was thinking,
who bought up the rights to the Little Rascals because he thought it was racist? Was that Spielberg or was that Bill Cosby?
Bill Cosby, I think.
That's friggin' lame, man. The Little Rascals.
That's why you don't see him anymore.
I know. They were awesome.
You can get them on DVD, man. Go to Walmart.
Yeah, but you can't get the whole series anymore.
Oh. You could probably get them from a Chinese bootlegger somewhere.
that may be too, yeah.
BitTorrent.
They got everything over there.
Because the Little Rascals was racist?
Yep. That's what he thought.
Well, many people have thought that, though, so he's not the first, though.
But didn't they release
Amos
and Andy?
You know
that
what?
Was racist.
I think you ever watched that, what is it, BET at night? When they have the comedians on and stuff like that. Now, that's racist. Why can't I sue them?
Because you're white?
I think that's racist. Like, they get up in front of everybody.
In this politically correct age, man, people...
I don't know.
Their skins are too thin, man. People need to get over it, you know? It's like, come on.
They need to be some fat geeks like us who have really thick skin.
Dun, dun, dun.
Anyway.
What else?
Memphis.
Dead.
Memphis.
What? Closed up shop?
Memphis. What? No. I installed Memphis the last couple of days. Although I was using... Yeah, we got to get back to, like, you know, technical crap, because people complain.
Is it the Star Wars?
Just wait till next week.
Don't you dare talk about stuff that you want to talk about on your own show, because I don't like it.
All right, so we'll get to some tech stuff. Memphis. I installed Memphis. We talked about Memphis, right?
A little bit.
Interviewed the dude and everything. So I installed Memphis on a supervisor's computer at work because she did not like Ubuntu. Ooh, everybody. Ooh, ha. Did not like Ubuntu.
Because of the root user, right?
No. She has no idea. She just didn't like the feel of the desktop. Don't ask me why. I don't know. So I put Memphis on there, which runs, in my opinion, it runs slightly slower than Ubuntu. However, she's, digging it, and it really wasn't that tough to install. This is like a 400 megahertz machine, right? 400 megahertz AMD with 196 megs of RAM. And so far, she's digging it. The only problem that I really had, I had two problems with it. One, it took me like four tries to get Thunderbird installed.
Really?
Don't ask me why. Using the Synaptic.
The repositories.
It kept crapping out on me. So I just kept doing it. Finally, it started working, so... I don't know what the deal is with that. In retrospect, I probably should have just downloaded the damn binaries and did it that way.
What was the other problem?
The other problem was printers. But this is like a problem in general. Like, they have this little printer. Memphis has this printer WinJiggy.
Dialog box.
Yeah. You press, you can do the printer thing, and it lets you install it and do the thing. It's a KDE widget sort of thing, right? And I used that, and, like, that didn't work. And I had to piss with it for, like, I don't know, half an hour or something like that. But that brings me, and I finally did get it to work, but that brings me to this point, like, why? Like, we're all talking about Linux on the desktop is the most badass thing going right now, right? All of us use Linux on the desktop. This is not a difficult thing to do. Linux on it's ready, right? No doubt in my mind. However, what if you want to print something out? I mean, generally speaking, I don't print a lot of stuff out, but... What if you want to print something out?
I haven't even hooked my printer up since I, like, disconnected it.
But I mean, like, in offices and stuff like that, you want to print something out. What if you want to print something out in Linux? Why the hell is it so freaking difficult to get a printer working?
Yeah. I mean, this never have a problem with cops anymore.
Yeah, this is not even a parallel port printer or something.
What is it, a laser printer?
Thing. It's a networked laser printer, for crying out loud. How tough is this? You know what I mean? It makes no sense to me at all, but I tell you, the thing that pisses me off the most, and this happens with cups too, I hate cups. The thing that pisses me off the most is I can get that same printer running under apps filter in like 5 seconds flat, man.
But no more apps filter.
And then they ditch apps filter because it worked. So they put cups in its place, which uses 57 different programs to do the same thing that apps filter did in one. And it, you know, it doesn't work half the time.
So. You talk about problems getting Memphis set up. I tried the same system with Linspire, and Linspire had the problems with, you know, this generic old HP DeskJet that I've had for, like, you know, 6-7 years.
Uh-huh.
You know, Memphis worked fine out of the box. Linspire had problems with it.
Really?
Yeah.
I had problems getting Memphis out of the CD case over
I
there.
I see that, yeah.
It never left, unfortunately.
And so what's cool about Memphis, though, it's a live CD, and the install is right there to fire it
yeah,
up.
Yeah, now that is kind of cool. Pretty cool. However, you know, I really probably should
I attempted to install it, and had absolutely no luck.
Oh, see, now it wasn't that hard.
Really?
I should have paid more attention to the directions, though, or, like, actually looked at some. No, I take that back. I did look at the website, which provides you with absolutely no freaking useful information.
Yeah, the website's kind of bare.
So if you're looking to get Memphis and install it and use it, go right ahead. If you want to use something off the website, you're SOL, buddy, because that website sucks. Warren, I hope you're listening. You better fix that thing, man.
Linux Question has a forum now for Memphis.
Really horrible.
They just started that, like, last week. Memphis has a forum on Linux Questions.
But yeah, like, I was wondering whether to actually install, like, if you have to be the root user to install from the /install CD, because the option is on both the demo user and the root
right.
user. I used the root one. I'm assuming the demo one would have worked, but just asked you for the
demo
password
one,
or something.
There is an older site that has documentation on Memphis, though, and to use the installer under the demo, you do have to give it the root password, which is root. So.
Right, yeah.
Real tough.
Yeah, again, something that you can't find on the damn website. The root password for Memphis is root. The demo password for Memphis is demo.
What do you think of the applications that were on the install CD?
Well, they like have, you know, any normal thing that anybody would use on there.
I thought it had quite more than the usual, than typical.
Like, you know, they have the open office suite of stuff in there, and they have all the things that you need for, let's say, burning CDs and or DVDs even. Playing music,
Java
web browsers, all kinds of stuff on there.
Java's pre-installed.
Mm-hmm.
It's got Azurius, you know, the BitTorrent client already installed.
Yep.
Flash was already on there. MP3 support. I thought it had a lot, more than what I've seen.
It's, you know, I really would be interested to see it on a fast system. Just because that might be something to recommend to, you know, the Windows weenies who need to convert and get to some software that works. That might be just a ticket for them if they have a reasonably recent system. Now, this 400 megahertz that I installed it on does not, I mean, it doesn't work bad, right?
How much memory did you say it had?
196 megs of RAM.
Yeah, that's not too bad.
Like, so, like, it doesn't work bad. It's not unbearable to use. However, in my opinion, it's rather slow. But then again, I use two machines currently. They're 2.4 gigahertz
yeah.
and 3 gigahertz.
So they're spoiled.
So I am slightly spoiled. And even when I did use a 400 megahertz, I ran Slackware on it, which is blazingly fast compared to Memphis or Ubuntu, as a matter of fact.
This segues quite nicely into... I went over to Easton Electronics over on North 3rd Street in Easton. They're listed as one of the people that are going to be providing pre-installed Memphis machines. So I had Julie.
And they looked at you like, what?
What's a Memphis? Right?
I had jury duty on Tuesday, so I took a walk over there after I was done. And I went in there. It's a small little shop. You know, they have all sorts of custom boxes, a lot of parts and stuff.
Did you get selected?
No.
Okay.
Thankfully. I started talking to the guys, and they were pretty clueless about the whole deal. Real nice guys, you know, they do all sorts of things. They repair TVs and electronics, but they also do custom, you know, computers. I was talking to them about Linux, you know. One of the guys is interested in coming to the LUG meeting, so
cool.
I invite him to come over and check it out. I was talking to him a little bit about home theater systems. We were talking about the Shuttlebox. I was telling him about Myth TV. He was telling me, you know, he was using Windows Home Media Edition, and, you know, that basically... That goes for $200, but since he works there, he gets it for, like, nothing, you know? So to him, it's like, you know, no difference. You know, to me or you, you know, we got to shell out $200, so we go to Linux Run.
Plus the cost of a Windows box.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So they basically, you know, they had no idea what I was talking about. They know they were on the list. They're
on the list for Memphis?
Yeah, what it is Memphis made a deal with Tech-Align, and these guys belong to Tech-Align, and Tech-Align is from New Jersey. And basically they said, you know, they would keep in touch with me. They would let me know if they had more information as far as a box coming in. And if they do actually get a box, that, you know, they'll give me a call and we can go down there and check it out and see what the deal is. If it's, you know, it's a pre-configured kind of situation or it's a custom situation. So as we get more information, we'll report back and you know, let our listeners know exactly what the deal is.
Isn't that kind of a problem, though, if they know it's coming, but they have no idea what it like is.
He knows what it
What's
is.
What's that there Linux stuff?
No, they were pretty knowledgeable, the guys. I got to give them credit.
I mean, are they using it?
Can I run that under Windows?
No.
But how could you sell? I would assume that they're going to provide some. They don't just sell systems. They also provide some level of support.
They do. Right? Actually, when I was sitting there talking, some guy came in with his laptop, and he had viruses on his Windows laptop. What a surprise.
But see, it isn't so.
And he was actually listening to my conversation with them. He was like,
and in my hometown.
Well, I was
no
waiting
less.
For the guy to wait, you know, to be outside waiting for me to ask him, you know, to give him a Linux CD to use.
How are they going to be able to support Memphis in any fashion or any version of Linux that they would sell if they don't use it? I mean, that's like the whole how is CFK going to instruct people to use Linux machines if they don't know how to use it themselves?
Right.
I mean, how do
we be willing to consult for them for a nominal fee if they're interested?
I think that'd be an outstanding
Here's
idea.
Here's a card.
Actually.
Check it out. Link.
Boy, is this their card?
Yeah, they're nice guys.
Easton Computer.
They've been there for like 20 years plus, supposedly. So, you know, we'll go back. We'll talk to them.
EastonElectronics.com. For all your networking and technology needs, you want to call these guys at 610-252-7311. Tell them the guys from the Linux Link
Free plug.
Show said
you. Card.
So we'll keep in touch with them. You know, as we get more information, we'll relay it back.
Tell them they need to drop that Winders.
Winders, yeah. Winders has got to go.
The service, are they actually an Apple certified?
I didn't see any Apples, but I saw a lot.
Did you say Apple Mac?
Saw a lot of custom boxes there. And they're also doing a lot of home electronics type stuff, too, like, you know, high-definition TV repairs and that kind of thing, too. But they actually had a nice parts selection in there. I was looking through them. They had some motherboards, different manufacturers. They had a bunch of different drives. And they had some nice boxes that you could pick from and put together your own custom box. So it's an option, you know.
And their business card is so purdy. Oops. Sorry about that. I just whacked Alan hand the business card. Pow!
No problem.
Alrighty. Hot diggity dog.
Ready for our interview?
Yeah.
I guess we are.
Let's give Kevin a call.
Anybody else have anything before
Hello,
the interview?
Kevin! He's not answering. Moving on.
You know what? Actually, give a couple more minutes because they said 9 o'clock, right?
Yes.
And I don't want to be too early.
Is it not 9 o'clock?
No, it's 8:59. Wait, let me check the official Bin Rev.
The official Bin Rev atomic clock.
We still got 50 seconds. Anyway, right. Just a little thing about Bin Rev I wanted to push out there. You obviously were talking about 2600 magazine.
Yes.
On your blog.
Yes,
Bin Rev also has a magazine.
Yes, it does.
Got their... They have a deal going right now for $25. You get all three copies.
Really?
That they've released.
I would like
a T-shirt and whatever other stuff they want to stuff in there. I got some stickers and a little Fourth Amendment card.
Yeah,
but I mean, I thought the Bin Rev magazine was really cool.
I looked for it. It looked pretty cool.
It is. It's worth. You know, if you just want the magazines for $5 a piece, three for $15. Mm-hmm. They said you get a T-shirt, too, if you go with the whole package, $25.
Not bad.
So it's not a bad deal. It's something, you know, worth checking out. You can find it at binrev.com. But I just thought I'd throw that out there. Really, really good stuff from those guys over there.
I did. I listened to Binrev Radio today, the latest issue. Did you hear that yet?
No, I haven't. I was busy fighting a antivirus problem today. I've listened to every other one. I like listening
to
that.
Stank Dog was in rare form. You'll have to listen to it. The rest of you have to listen to it, too.
Is he stinking?
I don't want to spoil it for you, but...
Did you listen to one where they
He was revisiting my favorite subject, which is Linux certifications, and he was
Would
making
hear,
all kinds
you,
of
you hear him go
that.
Off on ethical hackers?
Yes.
And what was another one? They did a really great... overview of programming languages a couple episodes ago, which was, I thought, really, really insightful. So, definitely, check out BinRev.
Yeah.
And all the other shows on there are pretty good, except I don't... Nextbox, which seems to be focused on the Xbox, which...
I haven't listened to it. The only one I listened to is there, so...
I'm not into Xbox. Anyway,
just
all right,
enough
so
hours in a day.
We have... Now, past 9 o'clock, and we'll give this guy a call.
Yeah, they're in San Diego, Linspire.
Right, so they're 3 hours.
6 o'clock.
3 hours behind, 6 o'clock. And I just have to remember what his extension number is.
I sent you the
email.
Our
Sith Lord thing over top of the,
that's right.
The mixing board here to make sure everything works.
Did you turn up the volume?
Yes, I just turned up the volume.
Turn it up.
All right, here we go. Oh, by the way, I'm down
be
to $5.
Be careful what you do, or I will sick Lord Metzler upon you.
Left.
So we can use my account if you need be.
Let's give it a shot.
Alrighty then.
I need to get...
For calling Linspire, if you know your party's extension, please dial it now.
Beep, 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 beep.
Account, dental product, and
didn't
service
work.
Questions.
Dang.
Contact customer care at extension 232. For technical issues, contact...
Hopefully we have better luck than with Ian.
...269. To reach the company directory, dial 0 or down the line, and you will automatically be connected. Using the dial pad, please enter the
try
extension
to
call. To use the directory, pound. To leave a message, press star.
This is a problem that Skype has that a lot of people have been talking about. Apparently,
right
when you dial into an automated system, a lot of times the automated system doesn't respond to the Skype.
Hello?
One moment, please.
Oh.
Wait. Can we boost up the volume? Because I could barely hear.
The operator is not available.
I guess it didn't work.
You reached Linspire, Inc.
Let me try calling back.
This is Skype.
Let's try it again.
Ian Murdoch, when we talked to him, after we talked to him, he posted on his web blog.
Linspire, if you know your party...
He was laughing at us because it took us like 3 minutes to call him.
General product and service questions.
It's not because we're a bunch of idiots. It's because of Skype.
Extension 232. For technical issues, contact technical support...
Well, they did give me his... cell phone number.
Directory,
I want to go that route, man.
And you will automatically be connected. Using the dial pad,
we may have better luck now since we're not feeding the audio back into the Skype line again.
To leave a message.
Hit pounds, see what happens.
I do not recognize. Using the dial pad, please enter the extension to call. To use the directory, press pound. To leave a message, press star. To reach
just
an operator,
call his
press
cell phone,
zero.
Man.
That's really annoying, man.
Should I call his cell phone?
Yeah, just call his cell phone. Hopefully it's better than the last time we tried a cell phone call. Last time we talked to Jared Wilson, and it was pretty bad.
Yeah, but like I said, we also were feeding audio back into his audio. I had a setting wrong over there. So we may be
not Alan. Never. All right.
As you call his cell phone, we'll see what happens.
Just want to make sure I have
this
right.
Is why we need to get a better solution instead of Skype.
No, we just need to figure out how to make Skype work better for us. Because Skype is a free solution.
Did you guys read my email?
Yes.
What do you think, yes or no?
Anybody who wants to give us stuff is fine with me.
Hello?
Hey, Kevin, how are you? This is Pat from the Linux Link Tech Show. How are you?
Hi, good.
Sorry, we're calling you on your cell phone.
You want me to call you back from the landline?
No, that would be difficult for you to call us. Because I don't think you can do a telephone line to Skype.
Unless you have Skype, and then you can call a Skype to Skype.
Do you want us to call you on your landline?
You want me to... you have to punch in an extension.
Yeah, that's the problem that
we're
having.
Does that work for you?
Yeah, we'll try that again.
Okay,
but
we can do it here if you can hear me okay.
I can hear you fine. Can you hear us okay?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
This works for me.
Let's give it a shot.
Okay.
Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Most people are pretty well aware of what Linspire is. You guys have been doing a PR blitz around the Linux community in Europe and in North America as well. Me personally, I tried downloading Linspire 5.0, and, I didn't think it was too bad. For a newbie, coming from that angle, I could see where you guys are aiming at. There are good things and there are some bad things. The things that I like was NVU. That's a great application. I use that regularly. I liked LSongs, which is kind of like iTunes. I like the concept, what you guys are doing with that. Basically, for people who don't know, is they have their own application that does, MP3 files. It's different from iTunes in that when you download a song, you can you have a music locker that you can download again in the future if you want to after you've purchased it the first time. That I liked a lot. The only thing that was a little negative on that was some of the artists, you know, I guess you guys are going through the process of signing new artists, correct?
Yeah, the obviously when they first launched it, it had a lot of independent artists. They had about 300,000 songs. But, you know, the intent and the hope is to eventually get more artists. But we're also committed to not using, you know, any DRM. And so that obviously keeps some of the major labels away today. And hopefully in time that will change.
I like that feature personally. One of the things that turns me off when I go into iTunes is the DRM. You know,
right.
As you know, I buy music. I should be able to do anything I want with that music. I should be able to listen to it in my home, in my car. I should be able to throw it out the window if I want to.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's so our slogan there is own your music, don't rent it. Because in essence, DRM, you're basically renting it, and then this concept of ownership goes away a little bit, which we think is a bad thing. And we think it's bad for the record industry. We think the labels will come to find that if you remove the handcuffs every time you sell a product, if you don't put a pair of handcuffs with it, they'll actually sell more software. I don't think it's that people are opposed to buying music. They think that all this trading is going on because people don't want to pay for music. No, a lot of it has to do with convenience. And so if they would make music stores that are really convenient at a reasonable price, they'll be just fine.
Well, one of the things that I liked about it was the feature that the artists are getting most of the money back from the purchase of the song. You know, the current setup now of the record industry.
Yeah, and that's true. The lion's share of that is going to the artists, absolutely.
And that's really the way it should be because they're the creative talent.
Yep.
What else did I like? I liked Elphoto. That's a nice application. You're, you know, able to import photos from your camera. That works pretty well. The install was very easy. You know, anybody can do this install. The things that I didn't like, I was having problems with my printer. I have an old HP DeskJet printer. For some reason, I could not get that to work properly. One of the other things was the FireWire wasn't detected properly on my system. That's not really a Linspire thing per se. I've experienced that on pretty much every distro except maybe Debian.
Yeah. Well, one of the nice things that is in Linspire, and I don't know if you saw this, is down in the lower left-hand corner, you have the little life jacket support icon, and if you pull that open, there's a menu that says additional support options, and then there's a menu there that says diagnostics report. And what that allows you to do is type in your problem that you're having with your printer or your FireWire or whatever. So it's really easy. Right off the desktop, you just select that option. You type in the problem you're having. You hit send on that, and then that sends a diagnostic report straight to our engineering team with all of the data that they need to try to help diagnose and fix that problem. And sometimes we can buy a CNR, the click and run, and push a fix to you, or we certainly can delve into it and see what we can do long-term to try to solve that problem. I mean, some of these problems you're going to have with any Linux just based on the, you know, how far along the driver support is for a particular printer, but at least we have a facility in place to communicate to us very easily, very quickly from the user's perspective so that this thing can get better and better over time.
Well, one of the things that really jumped out at me was the tutorials that came, the Flash tutorials, covering a whole slew of topics. That, I think, is very important.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of people from the Linux world, they kind of scratch their head at that one. I mean, we have tutorials in there, how to surf the web and how to set up your email. And they're like, wait a minute, this is Linux. This is a fairly technical group you're probably dealing with. But as you pointed out, our market is not necessarily the technical elite of Linux. We're selling computers into Mexico to homes that have never owned a computer before. I mean, 85% of the homes in Mexico have never owned a computer. Well, now, because of the affordability of hardware coming down and the affordability of Linux, they're able to afford their first computer. So they need that hand-holding, how do I set up my email, how do I connect to the Internet, and so on. And so it saves us from getting a lot of support calls by making those tutorials available.
Do you really think they're going to use Linux for that instead of just pirating a Windows copy like everyone else in the world does?
Yeah, I mean, right now we sell a lot of, we have an office in Mexico City. We sell a lot of software. You can go to, there's a website, lrazor.com. you know, L and then Razer, go raise some L, R-A-I-S-E-R, LRazer.com. And you can actually see a map that we keep updated of all the Linspire computers, brand new computers that light up throughout the world every single day. And you can see every day hundreds of new Linspire users are coming on board. And a lot of these are coming out of emerging markets like Mexico.
Your user forums are quite large. What's the amount of people on there now? What was it?
The what's large?
The amount of people on your forums.
Oh, on our forums. Yeah. We have hundreds of thousands of users. That could easily be the number that hit onto the forums. Very, very active forum community. If you go to linspire.com/community, I believe, it'll show you a chart of, you know, the activity of our forum versus a lot of the other Linuxes. And that's something we're very, very proud of. I'm proud to say you'll see thousands of posts from me on that forum. I don't know how many, you know, CEOs of the other Linux companies are actively out there posting among the user group. But, you know, nobody should be scratching their head what Kevin Carmody believes about our company, because they can go to our forums and they can read thousands of posts from me and other employees here. So we stay very in tune with our users, and I think that's a very admirable thing that we're very proud of.
Well, let me ask you, you guys only offer the live CD for try, right? And you offer 30 back money, you know, money back guarantee. If, you know, if you buy it and you don't like it, you can get your money back. Currently, 5.0 is what, $50 for the basic subscription, correct?
Yeah, the Linspire Live you can get free on BitTorrent, and if you go to our forums, you can see step-by-step exactly how to get Linspire Live for free. But if you want to get the full-blown program that you can install it and everything else, it's either $50 digitally or $60 if you want the manual and the book and everything shipped to you on CDs.
You think you would get more subscriptions if you maybe had, like, a free 30-day trial?
For the CNR subscription, you mean?
Just for the base install.
Oh, for Linspire in general.
Yeah.
Maybe we would, but, you know, I think there's a perceived value to things. And you have to realize our channel of marketing Linux is not as traditional as what people are used to with Linux. Most people, they view Linux as, okay, you go to the website and you download an ISO and you burn a CD. Well, again, our target market, they don't even know what an ISO is, let alone how to download it, burn it, and install an operating system. So our main method of distribution is getting the operating system pre-installed on computers. Well, if we go to an OEM, Gateway, Dell, whoever, and we say, hey, we have this kind of free thing and we want you to install and add value, that's kind of counterproductive for us. So there's some value in people understanding that this thing does cost money. And, you know, we have close to 100 full-time employees here, and so we think we're charging a fair price for that. I think because we freely make the live version available, hey, if people want to get a taste for what Linspire is like, they certainly can get their hands on the live version and play around with it. So I guess that's kind of our take on that one, that we like that it costs a little bit of money because it rewards the people who are helping to keep this company in business, and it creates value for the channel. You hear products like Ubuntu that, you know, you can go to their website and you can say, hey, send me 10 free CDs, and you will get in the mail 10 beautiful, packaged, wonderful CDs mailed to you. The challenge you have is if you go to CompUSA and Best Buy and these retail outlets and Fry's Micro Center, and you say, hey, we want you to help us to distribute this, they're not going to certainly do that for free. So there needs to be enough margin in there for them to participate. When you walk into a Best Buy and you buy a copy of Linspire, well, the retail price might be $59, but they're going to certainly discount that, as all these places do, and there needs to be enough margin in them for them to. So we only see a few dollars of that, because we've got costs in the packaging, then we've got to have the margin, and at the end of the day, that's where this pricing comes from. But we think to get to the mass markets, you have to get into mass market retail distribution at Best Buy and Fry's and CompUSA and so on.
Okay, but what about providing an avenue for some of the developers of Linux who you rely upon heavily to, you know, actually use your operating system? Doesn't it behoove you to let a few copies fly around of your actual OS?
Yeah, we
Yeah, we've given away, you know, tens of thousands of copies of Linspire. I know I did an interview on news, I'm trying to remember which website it was, NewsForge or one of those, and we gave a coupon code for the developer's edition of Linspire. Mm-hmm. We have different editions. We have the live edition. We have a developer's edition, which comes with all the compiling tools, so you don't have to use CNR to install those. Right. And we gave away, I think, 30, 40,000 copies within a week's time when we did that. And I think you'll see us do that with 5.0 as we get it a little more. You know, we got our plate full. We haven't even come out with a developer's edition yet. We just came out with the English version, the UK version. This week, German and Dutch, and then Spanish comes out. And then I think you'll start to see the developer's edition, and I'm sure we'll do the same thing. I think you'll definitely see us give away tens of thousands of copies to developers.
As one of the main costs that you have, you know, you have all the codecs pre-installed on your system. I'm assuming you guys, you know, you're paying for the licensing for all that. So I guess that's rolled into the cost as well, right?
Yeah, that's a great point that I failed to mention. We have, you know, all the codecs in there. We license font technology and a lot of things. So there is a per unit cost for a lot of this stuff, which is another reason we can't just totally always give it away for free.
And I think you guys,
that's a great point.
You guys are one of the few distros that actually has a DVD player that's licensed, correct?
Correct. Yeah, and that one you do have to pay. If you're a CNR member, I think it's $9.95 or something to add the DVD playback. So you don't include it in the basic OS, but you can buy it for really very inexpensively. And that's with XP. I mean, you buy XP, you don't get a DVD player, you got to pay $30-$40 to get DVD.
Or just hit Google for free.
A question about that. Do the video codecs, the ones that you need to license, come with Linspire, or is that a fee click and run package?
That's a click and run package that you have to buy, and like I think it's like $9.95, and that we then take that money, and that's how we pay for the licenses.
Okay, just your opinion on this, since you're on the marketing side of it and the profit side of it. When an operating system like Linspire, when somebody gets this and they start playing around with it, and all of a sudden they learn, well, for me to get DVD playback, that's $10. Windows codec, video codecs, that's $10. You know, do they start getting the impression that, whoa, it's not as, you know, everybody's hyping how cheap it is, how free it is. Now all of a sudden I'm up $20 on top of everything else.
You get nickel and dime.
Today, do you get feedback as to that? Why is it nickel and diamond? Death by a thousand little cuts. I mean, something like that.
Well, okay, first of all, let me clarify that. It's not $20. The $9.95, you get the DVD playback software with the codecs and everything. Now, in the warehouse, we have the free DVD that you can get for free. You know, you can get Zine, and you can do different things with the free DVD stuff that's out there. And so it's $10. It's not $20 to get DVD. Well, what choice do we have? I mean, we certainly can say, sorry, we don't offer DVD software. We don't want to do that to our customers. We could bootleg it and steal it. We certainly don't want to do that. We could, you know, expect that they're really technically savvy and they know how to go to the Internet and figure out how to do this. That's just not our target market. So we have no option. I mean, we have to charge for that. Just like with XP, they have no option. What we can do is we can charge a very fair price for that. So like I say, with XP, it's $30 or $40. With ours, it's $9.95. So I don't think we have any choice but to charge a little bit for it. The things that we charge, once you're running Linspire, we don't have that many nickel and dime kind of things. We have a DVD player for $10, which is a great value. We have virus protection. People who, if they want to buy virus protection, same thing you'd have on Windows if you want to pay additional, because we have to pay for that. We have to license that. As you and I know, I never run virus protection on my Linux machine, but we have a lot of Windows users that will not run Linux unless it has virus protection on it. It's like if you lived in, you know, a crime-ridden part of town your whole life, and then you move to a safe part of town, you still lock your door. And that's how these Windows users feel. They're just reluctant to run software without virus protection. So we charge for that. We have the CNR service. So if they want to get automatic updates and one-click install of all the open-source software, that's the service that we provide. And then we do have what we call click-and-buys. These are commercial programs, games, and so on that with one click they can buy those products. We don't think by not, you know, I think saying, hey, it's available and you can choose to buy it if you want, is a better solution than, hey, it's not even available. We want to give the consumer that choice. So if there's a commercial game and that guy who developed that game, the only way he makes it available is to sell it, hey, that's his right. We're not going to take that away from him. And we're also going to make that option available to our customers so with one click they can install that if they so choose.
Now, one of the things I noticed was you don't give the GCC compiler with the base install. You got to go out and get it, correct?
Yeah, unless you get the developer's edition, then but you can get all that stuff very easily with CNR. We have a developer's aisle. So we have this concept of aisles where you can take groupings, and there are thousands of these aisles that our users have created. We create some of them. So we have a developer's aisle that has, you know, 100 and some odd packages on it. You one click, and bam, you've turned a Linspire machine into a developer's edition machine. Or you can just get the developer's edition and install that version from the get-go, and then you have all of that included.
One thing I am noticing, though, and this is interesting, on your licensing information, when a person buys Linspire, it comes with a family license that they can install it on every machine in their house. Does the click and run subscription then also apply to every machine in that house?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of people, they end up buying a separate one because there's other services that they get and they like because they want to keep this machine a certain way. But absolutely, we have no problem with that. If somebody wants to have one CNR membership in their home, they want to keep all those computers updated, absolutely. That is in line with our licensing.
Now, does that also include, like, if they want to install the DVD player, $10, they can install it on every computer in their house, or is it $10 per machine then due to licensing issues?
I believe we have negotiated that as well. I mean, what we try to do with all our click and buys and everything is we're telling these vendors, hey, guys, be fair. You'll use family licensing. And today, I think we've been pretty successful in all the click and buys, everything in our warehouse. We've gotten them to agree to family licensing. I can't think of any exceptions to that. And there may be, and because the click and buy does have the capability when you buy it that a different EULA comes up and you can agree to that. And, you know, there's dozens of click and buy programs in our warehouse now, so I admit I don't know the licensing of every single one of those products, but we always really try hard to say, hey, make your product available with friendly family licensing so that it kind of mirrors what we're doing with EOS. So I think that's an advantage that we're trying to bring to the world to say, hey, you know, make it fair for the, you know, if dad has a laptop and a desktop, don't charge him twice. That's not fair.
Kevin, one of the things that people used to criticize you guys for in the early days was that everything ran as root. Is that still the case?
You cut out for just one second. I missed the middle part.
Is everything still running as root?
Oh, I gotcha. Yeah, you know, that's one of those first impression things that we have just never been able to shake. The very, very, very first version that was a sneak preview that was never general released, I think you logged in automatically as root, and then you had to go to the command line if you wanted to set up users. But boy, we changed that a long time ago. So while you're installing the software, we don't force you to create a user, and maybe some people still think we should do that. We don't force you, you know, if you want to run it as root, you certainly have that option, but it says right there, hey, here's how the security works. We recommend if you click and you follow the information, we recommend that you set up users. But we're not going to point a gun at a user's head and say you absolutely have to do that. But, you know, for many, many versions now, it's been very easy right during the install process. You set up your root account. You then set up as many user accounts as you want right even before you've logged in for the first time. So that's just one of those things. It's one of those bad raps that has followed us for some reason. And I don't know why, but, you know, and again, unless it's that people think we should force people to run as a user, which we don't believe that. We think it's your computer. You use it how you choose fit. We're going to certainly encourage you to not run as root necessarily, but if you feel like you want to run as root, that's your choice.
So if they're running, the general default install allows them to create users, just like Windows, I believe, does, and even OS X. So if they don't choose it, they're going to be running as root. And if they go to the click and run software, they're able to just drop that down. It doesn't ask for a password or anything or verification, or does it?
If you're correct, if they're running as root and they use click and run to install software from the warehouse, it does not ask for any additional passwords.
Okay. Now, just to play the devil's advocate here about running as root. Now, I know a lot of people are concerned, you said, with Windows users about viruses being installed on their machine. So they, you know, even though there's never really been an outbreak of virus attacks on a desktop Linux machine, they're still convinced that they need to run antivirus software. But what about if they're running as root, that leaves them susceptible to a whole bunch of different things. Exploits in maybe Firefox, where they can go to a site and it can download a malicious script, which is some of the stuff that we've seen in the past couple of weeks that's hit Firefox. And now, you know, because they're a root, it jeopardizes their entire system. Have you guys been, warning people about stuff like that?
Well, and that's why we explain this through the install process, that if you want optimum security, set up users and don't run as root. But, I mean, it just goes against every fiber of my being to force somebody who just bought something and to make them do it a certain way. I just don't think we're ever going to change on that. I mean, that's not all right. If I buy this computer, I go to Walmart, I buy a $250 computer, I put it in my kid's room, he's not even connected to the internet, he's just going to play a few games on this, and I forced him to run as a user and he doesn't want to do that, we just don't think that's right. We think you tell people, hey, it's important to have passwords. It's important to have good security. Here's the things that you should do for optimum security. But to treat every computer as if it's like in the Pentagon, that just doesn't make sense to us. And so if you're saying, should we force people to never run as root, we would disagree. And we'd say, no, that's not a good idea. What we should do is make it ultra easy for people to set up users, to log in as users, to encourage them, to make sure they understand the ramifications, but to not certainly force them to. I get upset every time I run a piece of software where the developer of that software thinks he's smarter than me. And he says, listen, I know what's best for you, so I'm going to do it this way. That's why I say, thank goodness for open source software, so I can change the way that piece of software works. Developer doesn't know always what's best for me.
Okay. You know what? We could debate this back and forth all day, and I know you've debated it with other people and other shows. But what I don't know, and maybe you can express this side of it, what has your tech support calls because of this issue? Has it been a problem with people running root?
Zero problem.
Not an issue.
Not an issue at all. I would say, first of all, most of our people don't run as root. I mean, most people, they see the big warnings when they install. Warning, you set up a users, and if you want to be secure and you don't want people getting your data, do this. And so I think most people that are running Linspire, they're not running as root. So right there, it's not going to be a problem. The handful of people that are running as root, I just don't think that there are people out there maliciously trying to get in and attack those machines. And if they are, hey, those people are probably going to get hip, and they're going to start running as a user. But it's not going to be me forcing them to do that.
Okay, so right now we can...
If a guy wants to leave the front door to his house open, that's his choice.
Okay. So what
we're going to warn him. We're going to make that lock super easy to turn on. We're going to tell him how the lock works. We're going to make it as easy as we can. We're going to encourage him to lock his door. But we're not going to say, don't you dare leave this house without locking this door. We won't let you. I believe in freedom. I believe in freedom of choice. That's a Microsoft kind of move, if you ask me.
Okay.
Agreed.
Fair enough. All right. So getting back to click and run. Now, click and run, the packaging system for that, is that based on Debian, and or is that...
Yes.
It is. It's the Debian package system?
Yeah, it's definitely based on Debian. What we do is we take the Debian packages, we unpackage them, we touch the software, we'll clean it up, we'll tweak it. We certainly don't touch all 2,000 programs in our warehouse, but like the top couple of hundred, the most popular programs, like GIMP, we definitely touch that. If you click and run GIMP, and then you go install GIMP from their website, you're going to have a very different GIMP experience. Ours is going to feel a little easier. It's going to look like Photoshop. It's going to default to my documents when you go to save something. It's going to have all the plugins properly put in there. So we take a Debian package, we touch it, make it easy for our target market, which is ease of use, and then we re-Debianize it and we package it up and we put that in the warehouse. If somebody wants to use AppGet, they can absolutely do that. I mean, they just go to the commission line and they can run AppGet. We certainly don't preclude them or stop them from doing that. Just that our target market, you know, somebody who knows how to use AppGet and knows what a command line is, they're probably not running Linspire anyway. They're probably running, you know, Mandrake or SUSE or something else. Our target market are, you know, the AOL of Linux. You know, that's us. We're the AOL of Linux. These people don't know what a command is. They don't know how to do that. But if they want to learn and they want to do AppGet, absolutely. We do not preclude that. We don't preclude them from downloading an RPM and compiling. And anything you can do with any Debian Linux, you can absolutely do with Linspire.
Now Memphis comes with a default firewall program. Do you guys have a similar type of program running by default?
A firewall?
Yeah.
Yes, it definitely comes with a very strict firewall. All the ports are closed. You know, for our firewall to be breached, it probably is going to take somebody that knows what he's doing, otherwise all the ports are closed.
Which version of Debian are you based off of? Do you base Linspire off of?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Which version of Debian do you base Linspire off of?
You mean like Woody or which warehouse is what you mean or...
Which version? Woody?
Sarge?
Testing
Sarge.
Unstable?
Testing Unstable.
We take from all of them, but we make sure they're stable before they get into our warehouse. So we have a mixture. So we definitely have all their stable warehouse you'll find in ours. But some of their unstable stuff, if we feel it's good enough and stable enough and we do some things to it, we might trickle some of that in. One of the cool things about Linspire and the way the Click and Run warehouse works is you can click and run from multiple warehouses. So, for example, we have an insiders program. We have about 15,000 Linspire users, which are insiders, and they have access to what we call the Thrill Seeker warehouse. So they can get all the bleeding edge stuff. So all this stuff that's under development, that's in testing, that's not super stable, they can point, click and run to the Thrill Seeker warehouse and they can have access to that. So we have that same concept as Debian that, you know, you can kind of choose. Now by default, everything goes to our ultra stable warehouse. And we make sure that everything that goes in that warehouse is very clean, stable, won't break anything. And I would say 99% of our users, that's where they pull from. But then you've got that 1% of insiders. We have a different warehouse for Linspire employees because of certain applications that are proprietary for our company. They're internal apps we've developed for our company. Those are in our warehouse. This technology scales into enterprise. If Shell Oil comes to us and say, hey, we love Linspire on the desktop, but we're not real comfortable in installing software from your repository, we want to have that on our servers, it's not a problem. We create a Shell warehouse that goes on their servers. They maintain that. They have a throttle to pull our, you know, warehouse into their warehouse if so choose, and then they can completely control that environment. So that's this great technology that we've built that allows us to kind of give that ultimate flexibility at whatever stage somebody's in running Linspire.
You mentioned just a minute ago that you allow people to use AppGet, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you use AppGet, does it obviously doesn't go through your click and run software.
Correct.
So are they getting the same software if they use AppGet? If they want to
No, if they use AppGet, they're going to be pulling from, you know, Debian's pools, so they're not getting our software.
So they're getting the default
and
Debian.
And you almost have to kind of choose one or the other, because if you start pulling from a whole bunch of different places, you can definitely sometimes start having dependency problems. So we usually have people that are, hey, I'm a novice, I don't understand how to install Linux software, I don't understand how this whole thing works, But boy, I can one click. I mean, we have 5 years olds that know how to use Linspire and click and run games all day long. Those people, they usually just lean on the CNR warehouse. But then the reverse side of that is you have people that say, hey, listen, I'm kind of interested in what Linspire is doing, and I'm a developer, and even though I don't want to necessarily use Click and Run, I know how to use AppGet, but as a developer, I want to kind of know what Linspire is doing, they'll probably use AppGet for everything. If you try to use the combination of the two, sometimes you run into dependency problems, and that's a problem. But usually, we don't have that problem because 98% of our people don't use AppGet. They don't know what AppGet even is. And then the 2% who do, they know how to fix things. They know how to clean up a dependency usually. But you're absolutely right. Are the people using AppGet getting these new and improved loved applications that we do all this love into? Not unless Debian decides to put that back. Any of the changes that we make to this stuff, we always give it back to the community, but a lot of times the community maybe won't want it because they're saying, well, that makes it easier to use, but that, for example, GIMP. I mean, GIMP has a very defined way they like to see those windows being used on the desktop. Well, they do it a little bit differently than that, and if we give that back to GIMP, they may say, well, that's great for your users, but we're not putting that in the main tree. And so that's cool. We keep following the main tree, and we just add our little special herbs and spices along the way for our target market.
So now, your target market, and you said you're the AOL of Linux, so to speak, making it easier for home users, businesses, schools to use Linux, and you're getting a nice little install base with some white boxes, OEMs, Walmart, and everything. One of the big sticky areas that a lot of people I know, when I think about moving people over to Linux, would be internet access. Dial-up accounts, in particular, are sticky situations with Linux, especially if it's like AOL or Earthlink or some of the other ones that, though right off the bat, won't support Linux or even sometimes talk to you if you're using Linux. Are you seeing doors opening to Linspire users?
Yeah, it's a great question, and absolutely doors have been open, and we've been prying those doors open from day one of this company. If you run Linspire, and once again, there's that little life jacket icon, and if you pull that menu up, there's a thing, option that says how to connect to the internet. And if you go to that, you'll see an Earthlink logo, you'll see an AOL logo, you'll see a United Online, you'll see Net Zero, you'll see Juno, you'll see Speakeasy, you'll see several ISPs that we've worked with to get it so that they have supported dial-up for Linspire. Now, the one that we did that they didn't kind of support us on was AOL. But we created, you know, the dialer, and it works well, but if you call up AOL, you're right. They're, you know, they'll be fine with fixing your account or whatever, but if you're having a connectivity problem, they're not going to know what you're talking about. But if you call, like, any Linux user in the world, if you go to Juno.com or you go to NetZero.com, right on the home page of those companies, you're going to see the big Linspire thing that says, hey, we support Linspire. And so we've worked with these guys to get the dialers that when you call them, they're not scratching their head going, we don't support this. So I think Net Zero and Juno have done a brilliant job of supporting us and what we're trying to do. You've got Earthlink, which has done a relatively good job. And then you've got AOL, which has done probably the least impressive job. But we've done everything we can to work around that.
One of the big things with Linux users is the pre-installed Linux machine. I know you guys are making inroads in this area. You have Walmart, you have Fry's. I also saw Sub 300. Any other vendors that we should keep a lookout for where you guys are going to be showing up?
We have over 350 OEMs. You've mentioned some of the bigger ones. Micro Center, we're doing something great with Micro Center that I'm just thrilled to death about, and that is a Linux store within a store. And this should be fully rolled out by probably the end of July. It's starting to trickle into some of the Micro Centers now. Micro Center, for those who don't know, it's a 25-store chain in most of the major metro areas in the U.S., but you're going to walk into a Micro Center. They now have three sections. They have the Windows section, the Macintosh section, and now the Linux section. And the best part of all is there's not just like one computer there. There's several laptop and desktop computers. And even more important, there's a trained salesperson who actually can answer a question about Linux. And we've helped Micro Center come up with this training program.
inside of every store will be a Linux guru salesperson that is specifically trained to answer questions about Linspire. And so the experience you're going to start having when you walk into a Micro Center is, hey, I'm looking to buy a computer. Well, why don't you tell me what your needs are? Well, I'm a graphics designer. Oh, let me show you the Macintosh section. Or, oh, I'm an accountant and I'm doing all this stuff for finance. Maybe I better show you the Windows section. Oh, I want a second computer for my kids at home. Or I'm doing basic internet work. Or I want a really secure computer. Hey, let me take you over to the Linspire, to the Linux section, and let me show you the advantages that Linux has. We don't believe in a world of, you know, Microsoft created this monopoly. We're not trying to go from one monopoly to another. I got 50 brands of toothpaste I can choose from. There should be many choices when it comes to computing. And so if I want to, I'm in the artistic mode of that, maybe I choose Apple. If I'm in this really hardcore account mode, maybe I choose Windows. If I'm in many other modes, I very likely could choose desktop Linux. If affordability is important to me, if security is important to me, if no viruses is important to me, if stability is important to me, take me over to the Linux aisle and tell me about this alternative. And that's great. I mean, so we're rolling that out with Micro Center. When Fry started selling our machines, they viewed this strictly as a loss leader. They viewed this as, hey, let's get people in the store with a $200 computer, and once they get here, we'll convince them to buy a $600 Hewlett-Packard running Windows. Well, they still sell thousands and thousands of these Linspire machines, and so what they're realizing is, oh my gosh, it isn't just, they're not just being attracted by the $200 price, there are people that want Linux on their desktop now. And so that's what Micro Center saw. So Micro Center spoke the same way Fry's did, but they go, you know what? We got a big customer base that wants Linux on the desktop. They did a survey, and 80% of their customers said, the question was, would you consider buying a Linux laptop or desktop computer in the next year? 80% of their customers said yes. That's why they said, hey, Linspire, it's time for a store within a store, and so that's what we're rolling out with them. So this is exciting. I mean, this is like, hey, Linux isn't just about getting a super cheap computer that's $100 less because it doesn't have Windows on it. It's now about, no, I want security. I want a choice. I want an alternative to what Microsoft is offering. That's exciting.
So is there, now I've heard rumors, and I just want you to clarify this. Is there any truth to the rumors that some of these machines that come pre-installed with Linspire will not run any other operating system?
No, that's absolutely, if that's true, that's news to me, and that seems strange to me, because these are Intel-based machines.
Right.
In fact, usually right next to the Linspire machine is the $100 more expensive Windows version of it.
Right.
So that's definitely a rumor. No truth to that at all.
Right.
Linspire machines being sold on Walmart. When are they going to be moving to version 5? Do you have any idea? Because right now they're still at 4.5.
Yeah, great question. I mean, it's amazing how long it takes to go from, boom, we released the version, to getting their hardware in, certifying it, pushing the old inventory out, and getting the new machines in. I think you're going to see most of the OEMs who are selling Linspire machines will start to have the 5.0 machines trickle in. Probably by the middle of summer, most of the 4.5 stuff will be gone, and you'll see 5.0 at Walmart and in Fry's and all these other places. But it does take that little extra bit of time, because these companies don't just say, hey, well, let's take the new version and start installing that. No. We have a certification lab, and if anybody's ever in San Diego, we invite you to come on a little tour and check out Linspire. We have this big certification lab where we have hundreds of pieces of hardware, whether it's motherboards, computers, laptops, monitors, you name it, and all this stuff gets certified with Linspire. And so before Walmart will start selling this, we have to recertify all this stuff, and it just takes them time, and then they want to push their old inventory out and so on. Now, the nice thing is, if you're running 4.5, you can, you know, and you have the click-and-run service, you can, via that service, get 5.0 and update your system that way as well.
How much does it cost to stay with you? Say if you have 4.5 and you want to continue with Linspire, how much is it to continue yearly basis?
As long as you have a CNR subscription, we give you unlimited updates. So if I'm running 4.5 and I have a CNR subscription, I can download the latest ISOs. So 5.0, 6.0, 7.0, I can download all of those at any time.
And the CNR subscription is how much?
It's either $4.95 a month or $50 a year. And what you get for that, you get one-click install of all software, again, that's been touched and changed and modified to make it easier for them to use. You get automatic update notification, which is my favorite thing, because, kind of like once I install my software, it's not like every day I run to the warehouse and see what's new. Now, a lot of people do that, but I don't. I kind of have the software that I need to run what I need to do, but it's great because every few days I get a little notification, hey, there's a new version of LSONGS. Click and you got it. Hey, new version of EnView, here it is. Oh, new version of Firefox, here it is. So by being a subscriber to that service, all this software is constantly updated and stayed current on my machine. It manages all my software in a locker, like we talked about even with the music. So I can be traveling. My brother who lives in Dallas, he runs Linspire. I can go to his house, I can sit down at his computer, log into my account. There's all the software that I've ever installed, and with one click I can get the client software that I need, zap to that machine. And then I have access to all of the support, so I get support for that. I get OS updates for that. So you really get a lot, and I know sometimes we get flack, people saying, hey, you're charging for free software. And my answer is, no, we're not, because if you're running Linspire, you can get the free software just like you could if you were running Mandrake or anything else. We're not stopping you from still getting the free software. What we're doing is how you get that. It's a service that makes it a little easier. It's like having water delivered to your home in a bottle. Hey, the water may still be free if you want to drive up and go to the spring and bring your bottles and get the water, but if time is valuable to you, maybe you'd rather have that delivered to your home. You pay $50 a year. People now, pay for services all the time.
How many times a year
do you have haircut, oil change, whatever?
How many times a year do you have a release? Do you make release of Linspire?
The last version that we had was 4.5, and that was actually 14 months ago. Okay. Because we spent a lot of time on 5.0, and because we really wanted to do a great job on it. So usually, once every year or so, we're going to have a major update.
All right, so that would cost you
$50. We have all sorts of security patches and enhancements.
Right, that would cost you $50 anyway if you wanted to, logically and progressively upgrade your Linspire version to the latest and greatest.
Exactly, and that's why
it costs you $50 a year to do that. So
that's right. And what you have to understand is we have the numbers. 80% of the people who run Linspire, they have a CNR subscription. I mean, it's kind of like TiVo. I could go buy a Sony box of TiVo, but if I don't have the subscription to get all the updated TV directories, it doesn't do me much good. That's how people kind of view Linspire a little bit. They're like, hey, this is a great service. I pay a few bucks for it, and it really adds a lot of value. So 80% of the people running Linspire, they have that subscription. So we do not sell a lot of updates. When 5.0 came out, you didn't see a big spike in our revenue because everybody ran out and paid us to update their software. They all had CNR, so they just went and got it as part of their CNR subscription, and they updated to 5.0.
Kevin, question. You guys have L-Photo, you have L-Songs. Are you going to have anything for video editing? Video editing is one of the areas where Linux is weak these days.
Absolutely. That's a great one. And we have a list of several applications that we want to kind of attack. And the top two on that list, video editing and better money manager programs, to kind of the quicken kind of replacement. There's some reasonable, decent ones out there, but nothing at the level of quicken. Think that's a bit of a hole. And let me be clear, Linspire does not want to be in the application software business. We want to see the ecosystem kick in, but there's lots of people. Open source does a great job of providing what I call bricks, but they don't always kind of take it to that last level for our target audience, which is the ease of use audience. So what we're doing with LSONGS and EnView and LPhoto is we're kind of fueling that. They're all open source projects. We're pouring the money, and the code is out there available. We hope more people participate so that we can see these products advance. Hey, in my view, the most important thing we're doing with LSONGS is constantly pestering Apple, when will iTunes be available for Linux? To me, that's the best of all worlds. Because, hey, Apple, if you got this great program, it's very popular, it works with the iPod, you got your music store, there'll always be LSONGS as an alternative, but we would love it if iTunes worked on Linux too. And we're here to help you. We will provide resources. We will pay money if that's what it takes. So we're doing everything we can. You saw recently Adobe Acrobat 7. We help beta test that. We work with them on making sure that this software is coming. So whether it's from new developers, whether it's from existing open source projects, whether it's from new projects that we're involved with, whether it's from us funding and pouring money into Mozilla and OpenOffice, or whether it's us getting on our hands and knees and saying, Adobe, Macromedia, Quicken, Intuit, please understand that this is coming and you really need to start supporting this or you're going to get left behind. Look what happened to WordPerfect. Look what happened to Lotus. When it went from DOS to Windows, that's when WordPerfect and Lotus lost their market share. They waited 1 year too long to have their Windows products, and all of a sudden Word for Windows and Excel became the new champs. Well, Adobe shouldn't want that to happen, and some of these commercial companies. Now, there's some people say, hey, I don't care if Adobe comes out with Photoshop tomorrow. I'm going to keep using GIMP. And I say, great. The more choices, the better. But there will be those graphics designers that absolutely want to have Photoshop, and I would love to see that alternative. I'm all about choice. More choice, the better. Free, commercial, whatever. Give me as many choices as I possibly can, which is another nice thing about the Click and Run warehouse. Anybody in the world can publish their software to that warehouse. It can charge for it. It can be free. We're unbiased. Anybody who wants to make their software available to Linspire users, they can go to the website, linspire.com/publish. They can read how to do it. They don't have to call us up. They don't have to pay us any money. They don't have to ask for permission. And their software can be put into the warehouse.
So that means we'll see an L video soon?
Hopefully soon, yeah. I mean, I don't want to announce anything as far as how soon, but those two applications are top on our list. And we have a whole applications department here that does nothing but focus on these applications. Those are the next two that they're on the top of the list that we're involved with. And so you're absolutely right. That's a big hole in the Linux world right now.
So,
and additionally, you'll see a lot of enhancements to our existing stuff. L-Songs, the next version of L-Songs supports the iPod. Very important in my view. So you're going to start seeing, you know, not start to, you'll continue to see enhancements in our existing projects that we're working on.
All right. Now, do you guys have any video editing software in a Click and Run repository?
I'm sure there are some, and I've heard, you know, our people here bantering around different names, but I plead guilty. That's not an area that I've personally done much video editing, so I don't know what's in the warehouse today, but I know we got something in there
Keynote.
That people are using.
All right.
There you go. That's the one. That's Keynote. The one. Yeah, in fact, and I think the debate that I heard as recently as today is, hey, let's not go start something new here. Let's go to Keynote, and let's figure out how can we pour money into this and try to help fuel this to maybe take it to the next level. That's what we did with EnView. I mean, L-Songs, we kind of took a lot of pieces. We took, you know, XMMS, and we took GRIP, and we took, you know, FreeAmp, and we took a lot of these, and we created kind of this overall experience. But with EnView, we just straight jumped right on the Composer tool. In fact, the same people that were working on Composer are working on EnView. So it just depends where the project is at. KOP, that's a project. We've been a game, you know, supporter for a long time, even though we tend to be more KDE-based. We love game. We think game's done a great job, but we've kept a close eye on KOP, and sure enough, KOP is really making some great headway. So we've recently reached out to KOP, and we said, hey, we want to financially support you. Who are the key developers? What can we do to see KOP get to a really nice level?
Kevin, we are just about running out of time. So we have a few questions
okay.
that we ask all our guests that hopefully you'll be willing to answer for us. And we'll
okay.
let Link ask you those questions.
We would love to know, of course, what kind of desktop system you're running. I'm assuming you're running Linux and Linspire.
I'm running fully Linspire. I've been running Linspire full-time for the last couple of years. It was funny, when we started the company, Michael Robertson, our founder and chairman, he gave an edict, and he said, everybody here will be running, you know, desktop Linux from literally day one of the company. And I said to him, I go, I'll tell you what, Michael, you run Linux today, even though it doesn't do everything we need it to do, and that will be your test. I will start running it when it does everything it needs to do, which I think is a more fair test. because you have to win me over. And so about 2 years ago, Linux started to do everything I needed to do, and you could not drag me back to Windows. If I was no longer involved in a Linux company tomorrow and I went and did something else, no way in a million years do I go back to Windows. So this isn't me being forced to use it anymore. I love it. I prefer it. You could not get... I see my friends running Windows. I see the viruses. I see the problems. They see me. They all say, how do I get that? I'm sick and tired of this. I want to get on to Linux. So absolutely, I run Linux. And I run it on a generic white box, 512 megs of memory and a 80 gig hard drive. I couldn't even tell you the name of this. I'm looking at it. It's a white box that we probably bought at some local OEM shop, you know, a couple years ago.
All right, Vire Emacs.
Say that again?
VI or Emacs?
Oh, is this an editor thing?
It is. It's one of those religious Linux questions.
Yeah, and this is where me, hey, I'm not, you know, I didn't know what Linux was 4 years ago. And so I'm the target market for our product. And so I don't even know what that means.
Oh, okay. No problem.
Here's the answer that you want to give everybody. It's VI, okay?
It's on Fox. It's on Fox or Briefs.
Okay.
It's
okay.
VI.
Well, Kevin, we got to close up shop here because we're running out of time. I want to thank you very much for coming on and talking about Linspire and the wonderful things your company's doing.
Absolutely. And we hope
thanks for having me.
Yeah, we hope we can contact you in the future for some updates.
Absolutely. I mean, our door's open. We got a big, you know, job ahead of us. When I say we, I'm not just talking Linspire. I'm talking Linux. We got a big educational job. I went last night and listened to the CEO of Red Hat speak at the local university here at UCSD. So this is the CEO of what everybody would probably agree is the number one company in the Linux space. There were 60 people is all in that audience. And he was thrilled to be there, and he was happy to talk to me. And kudos to Matthew, and I was very impressed. But we got a lot of work to do. A lot of people don't know what Linux is. It's better than people think it is. So I'm happy to talk to anybody at any time and beat on this drum. And there's plenty of room for everybody. I mean, we have our niche. Our niche is ease of use, but we need Mandrake. We need Zandros. We need, you know, SUSE. We need Red Hat. We need them all to create an ecosystem that can really take on the bigger problem, which is the Microsoft monopoly, to present a choice. And I'm not anti-Microsoft. I'm anti-that I have no choice. So I appreciate the opportunity, and invite me anytime.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
That was Kevin Carmody from Linspire.
It was.
And that was all our time.
It was.
We got 2 minutes, right?
That was great. I enjoyed talking to him very much.
He's good. Listen, man, the guy doesn't back down from answering any question. I give him credit.
Apparently not.
And we have still a minute and a half. We didn't get to the Kernel Corner thing today. This week, but that's fine. We'll just talk about it next week.
Yeah.
So next week, no guests, from what I understand.
Yeah.
I don't have anything lined up for a month.
We can talk amongst ourselves and possibly get a hold of maybe one or two of our adoring
guests.
Our adoring fans in IRC.
Yeah.
Maybe will possibly join us.
Andy's back at work.
Yeah.
It's Dicks, and brought up the open source store and why it's not there anymore.
Gotta get the details, man. So. The down low. We gotta get it.
The down low. Are you on the down low path?
The down low.
We gotta get in on that, man.
What's up?
Give me some of that.
Oh, my goodness. You got 50 minutes, 50 seconds left.
Alan, go for it.
Shout outs. Alan, give a shout out.
To my homies?
Yeah.
To Alan's homies.
Just a reminder that people are on the chat all week long.
Yeah.
On the LV Lug channel also. Keep on sending us the emails. Let us know where you're from.
More hate mail.
I didn't even know we had an LV Lug channel.
How bad we suck.
You
don't send
know
us
that,
more hate mail, please.
Send us those. Yeah, hate mail, love mail, IDs.
Come on and get ridiculed, Alan.
Cat chow.
Cat chow.
Drink Fest coming up soon. We'll have an announcement regarding the Whitebacker Brewery Tour.
All right, this is 15 seconds. Wrap it up, B.
Thanks for listening.
All right, everybody, I'm Link.
I'm Alan.
I'm Pat. Good night.
Good night, all.
Good night.
Linux Link Tech Show.